Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift and antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we're here to prove it. Identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. My name is Brandon. The smiling guy in front of you is Matt, the reseller, the secondary market merchant. That's right. We got to come up with like a flashy name for you. In Mad Max, it was the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla. So that, I don't know, the merchant of doom. I don't know what we would call you, mm-hmm. but yeah, we got to come up with some sort of a nickname for you because Rusty's great, but we need something lethal. What could be your WWE name? That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to put some thought into that. I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, it needs to highlight a lot of my positive qualities, right?
Yeah, well, you would be the good guy. I mean, for sure. I would be the bad guy in the ring, for sure. I would be the one lifting his hand up to listen to the crowd boo at me, all those kind of things.
Oh, sure. They love that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, Matt, let's get started.
Yep.
We have chitter-chattered so much lately that our shows have gone a little bit longer than we would like. We try to keep them around 30 minutes. But let's get started today. What are we going to be talking about on the show? Or actually, first off, before we what we're going to be talking about, what sold this week, Matt?
Yeah. So for those who are just tuning in, I don't love the term, but I am what you have heard of as a reseller. My whole business, my whole career right now is buying things that are undervalued and trying to sell them and make more money on them. It's a simple concept. What goes into it is anything but simple, but that's what I'm doing. And so the first things I'll show today are a couple of things that I did sell this week. The first thing, and a lot of times these categories, you know, the things I show fall into the same categories, and there's a reason for that. I don't sell just one item. I do a type of item. I sell multiple types of items, but those can all be usually packaged down into antiques or collectibles that are small. And the item I'm showing right now fits that bill perfectly. It is a, what you would call a bangle bracelet.
Can I interrupt you really quick, Matt, before you go to the definition? If you listen to any of the last few shows, one of the reasons why Matt sells things that are small goes into the business math of what he's doing. A lot of it has to do with shipping and overall costs. So just for anybody who's just tuning in, it's not that you wouldn't sell a $5,000 guitar, you would, but you just traditionally and typically sell smaller items because they're just easier to move and it's more flexible, I guess.
Yeah. Reasons I sell are what you said. They're small. They're readily available for me to buy and sell on a regular basis. They are cheap to usually buy. They are cheap to store. I can store massive amounts of them in a small amount of space. The materials to ship them are inexpensive. The shipping cost itself is inexpensive. I've found that it's easy to run a business when I stay sort of in that vein. This bracelet that sold is a sterling silver bracelet. It has some small pieces of turquoise of a couple of different colors inset into it. It hinges and opens up on one side. This is what would be considered a Southwest style bracelet. This kind of has just the look of it, the way that it's designed. It probably was produced in Arizona or New Mexico or one of those states. Sterling silver. It's sold for $23. I buy things like this every week for $2 and $3 a piece at places where they don't know that it's silver. They don't really know what the value is. It's mixed in with costume jewelry, but I handled enough jewelry. I know how to identify things. And so this fits the bill. I know when I look at this, roughly when I'm going to make within a few dollars range, because I've done it so many times, I know that this is going to fit into a bubble mailer that's going to cost me 40 some cents. It's going to cost between $3.50 and $4.50 to ship it. So all that is being calculated in my head when I'm looking at it and looking at the price. Does it make sense? So if I pay this for $3 for this or $2 for this, and I sell it for $20 to $30, even with the shipping costs and stuff, it still makes sense for me to buy that item. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if you bought that for $10 and you sold it for $20, you're like, wow, I made 100% profit on it. You didn't make 100% profit on it. And that's why if you go back and listen to some of the other shows about, I was talking to a friend who's kind of getting into the art selling business. He makes this incredible art, and he, I said, you should listen to the show because Matt really goes into the details of actually buying and selling, and specifically selling. And so we did a whole numbers game on the last show about what the hidden costs are, if you will. So
right.
That's what I just want to point that out. A lot of people go, wow, what's the problem with buying that for 10 and selling it for 20? Well, you're not actually making $10 off of the item. That's the problem.
Yeah, I'm going to net 40 to 50% across the board. If you look annually at all the things I sell, if I'm shooting, say, hey, I want to make a living and I want to make $100,000 doing this full time, which is a very high bar to set for yourself, you have to sell at least $200,000 worth of
right.
things from the cost, in my experience and what I'm looking at. And now that's quite a bit harder if you're just one person. There's only so much time in the day.
Right.
Another item that I sold, it's actually a lot of three different items. I'm going to hold them up here. These are miniature Hot Wheel cars. So you know what Hot Wheel cars, little matchbox Hot Wheels. But these are like the size of my thumb, like from the middle joint to the end of my finger. They're super tiny. Kind of like Micro Machine. Do you remember the Micro Machines from the, the 80s and early 90s? These are newer though, and they're in their individual packages. I've got, what do I have here? I've got like a Roadster. Looks like I've got a Camaro.
Nice.
Couple of different ones. But these come, there are companies out there right now making these. You've seen these types of toys where they're like surprise kind of things. So you open them and you generally know there's like, you get any one of 20 of these particular things. You don't know which one's going to be inside, but that's part of the fun of it is it's a mystery. These mystery type toys. They've got them targeted for girls and other ones for boys. There's dolls, there's cars, there's right. action figures. So this is something that came out of one of those. They have opened the package, discovered, hey, there's Hot Wheels inside, but they never actually took the Hot Wheels out of them to play with them. They just left them in this. And then somehow these found their way into a tub full of toys that was had clear tape all over it at a Goodwill for $20. And it was mixed in with 75 to 100 other toys. Most of them used, but some of them new. I paid $20 for that entire tub. These three little Hot Wheel toys sold for $18.
Wow.
So with this one sale, I'm $2 away from having made all my money back on that. And actually, I've already sold some things from that. So I've already made my money back. I'm already into profit. This is a good example as far as the size of things that I like to buy mm-hmm. and sell, but also the way in which I go about sourcing, which is, hey, if I can buy a lot of things and sell two or three of them, make my money back, then I don't have to sweat on trying to sell the other stuff quickly. I can let it sit at even a higher price than the average sale, wondering if somebody might buy that. And I can build up a store of thousands. This is how I do it. I have three eBay stores. I have multiples of thousands of items for sale today. And I probably only have maybe 50% of what I actually own available for sale. I just haven't gotten around to listing the rest. And meanwhile, every week and every month, I'm buying more and more to replenish.
So let me ask you a question. I was thinking about that. Like, so do you have some sort of a number in your head, baseline number of how long you'll hang on to? So you got this tub and some of the stuff's just not going to sell, period. And you're going to donate it back to whomever. And maybe another reseller is going to come buy that tub
That's
or whatever. Right. So it's going to go back into the system. But how long in your mind do you typically hang on to stuff? Once you've hit your number, or as mm-hmm. they say in the sales business, once you've hit your nut, what is going to be your time?
That's a great question. And this is not, you should do this. This is just for me.
Mm-hmm.
About a year and even less time than that. If 6 to 8 months go by and a thing has not sold, and mind you, during that time, I'm reducing the price incrementally to try to find that sweet spot where the buyer's going to want to buy it. But if it goes down to where it's even with or below the average sale and it's still not selling, I'm like, clearly there isn't enough of a market for this as I thought there was, or mm-hmm. oftentimes the things anymore. Early on, I was making mistakes because I just didn't know a whole lot. And I still do from time to time, but more often than not, types of items that we're talking about right now, ones that just sort of sit there, aren't things that I didn't necessarily make a mistake. What I did was I bought out an entire room at a thrift store that had thousands of items in it. And some of those things need to be just pitched. Some of those things need to be repaired. Some of those things don't really have a market. I wouldn't have bought it to sell individually, but since I have it and it's a part of this whole thing, like why not? I'll throw up and try to make some money on it. So my first stage is I incrementally reduce the price. If it doesn't sell, then what I do is I take it and other similar items, if I have them, and I'll lump them into a lot. So instead of selling individual items, now I'm selling a group of 10 items, trying to move it that way. If I go that route and it still doesn't sell, then what I do is I periodically load up some boxes of things or tubs of things, and I donate it to one of the local thrift stores that I regularly shop at. So they can make money from me as a buyer, and then I also am donating items that they can make money on, and I like being able to be there on both ends of that. But not everything's going to sell. Not everything has a market. That's just the way that it is. And that's why you need to, if you're buying things individually, you definitely need to get good at researching that. And this is actually a great question, Brandon. You don't know this, but this is because we don't talk about what we're doing before we do it. But this is going to segue into what I was going to talk about today, which is something called the sell-through rate. Hmm. And I sell on eBay primarily. So for those of you who are starting out and you're trying to figure out, like, what do I even buy and sell? It's really hard to refine something when you've never really had experience with it in the first place. What do I focus on? Well, you obviously can only get what's available to you. So unless you're going to source online, you have to get things that are in your local area you can find. But as far as a target, what I'm going to suggest is that people get good at doing the following research, and that is to figure out what the sell-through rate of a particular item or category is. The sell-through rate is a term meant to describe what percentage of items are selling in a given period of time on eBay. I have behind me, I don't know if you can see back there, I don't have them in my hand at the moment, but I have about 8 tobacco pipes, like briar pipes, that I bought in a lot.
Ooh, I want one of those.
Oh, well,
I will pay you for it.
Hey, listen, I'm picking up another lot today of maybe 8 that I bought at a silent auction someplace. I got a call yesterday that I won them, so I need to go pick them up.
You know what's funny? I had a friend who was a big pipe smoker, and I was like, oh, that might be kind of fun every once in a while to have a little pipe, a little J.R.R. Tolkien pipe. And the irony is I went and searched for pipes, and I could not find one. I went to tobacco shops, and I went to all these places, the only pipes I could find were really, really expensive ones or really, really cheap ones.
Sure.
I was like, it can't be $200 for a pipe, but yes, guess what? It is. So I will definitely be looking at your pipe collection there, Matt.
While you were talking, I backed up there and I grabbed a couple. So I'm going to show you some. This is one that's kind of been what this type of design on the bowl here, where it's really kind of textured and seems like it's been chipped up and or carved.
Beautiful.
It's very cool. It has a sterling silver band here, which I just polished this morning. They usually do this kind of design on briar wood that actually is maybe a lower quality briar or doesn't have as beautiful of the wood grain. They reserve those premium pieces for really nice cuts or really smooth bowls so that you can really see it really well. This is a brand called Pall Mall, which is they make cigarettes, but I didn't know they made pipes until recently. Here's another one. This is like a lighter brown bowl, but you can see it has some really beautiful like bird's eye kind of grain in that. And then this one as well, this is another one. This is what would be considered a straight pipe. It's got a really beautiful grain on it, like a kind of a medium brown
color. And it's wood?
It's wood. So briar wood is actually from a root ball of like a bush.
Oh.
So it's underground. It grows underground. And as you remove it and you get all of the everything off the exterior of it and you grind down, then you've got this wood that it's like potentially really nice color. It's really thick. You can get large blocks of it to carve out of. If it's thick enough, it's good to smoke out of, so it can handle the heat, right, of something burning inside of it. You can hold it in your hand. I've held pipes before that were too thin, and they get so hot you almost can't hold them, which is like a poor quality design, because obviously you want to be able to hold it while you're smoking it. I buy these usually in lots. Sometimes I'll buy them individually. Usually, like you, when I find them individually, they're too expensive. They don't make sense to purchase for resale, only if I would want to use it. But when I come across lots, I usually can sell these for $20 to $30 a piece on the low end. But before I get into that anymore, the reason I wanted to talk about these pipes and show these pipes is to kind of make the point I'm taking too long to make. But that is, you want to target items that sell very well, very often, ones that are in more demand. Now, how do you know that? Well, the sell-through rate is a calculation where you can go into eBay and you look up an item. So if I did this morning to have an example for you for a couple of categories. If I type in vintage pipe into eBay and I hit turn, it's going to pop up however many are available in the store today. I did it this morning. There were about 8,800 items that have vintage pipe in the title. 8,800.
Oh,
8,800. Wow. So then I go to the left side of the page. I scroll down until there's a button that clicks that says sold items. When I do that, it's going to not show me things that are available for sale. It's going to then show me all of the items that said vintage pipe in the title that have sold on eBay in the last 90 days. And this changes every day, right? It adds a new day.
Sure.
It's a different 90-day period every day. You go through there, and it will now show you the number of items that sold, the number of pipes, vintage pipes that have sold in the last 90 days is 7,900. Oh. So there are currently 8,800 available for sale. In the last 90 days, 7,900 have sold. You divide one into the other and you will find that that's an 89% sell-through rate. Meaning if I put on a pipe, a vintage pipe on eBay, there, you know, 89% of people who do that are going to sell that item within the next 90 days, roughly speaking. So you want to find, that's fantastic, by the way. There aren't a lot of categories on eBay that have thousands of items available and have an 80 to 90% sell-through rate. There are not a lot of them, but there are some. I sell things in those categories pretty often. Fine jewelry, pocket watches, like we've talked about on previous episodes, and pipes. Pipes are fantastic.
Can I nerd out for just 1 second before you go on with that?
Go right ahead.
So if you look at that, do they give you an aggregate? So you have to do the math yourself of the 90 days. They don't have a historical number on there. And the reason I ask that is some of these things are going to be all of a sudden pipes become really popular. And so people want to get pipes. And is there ever a time where you see a dip in that when it becomes less popular for an item? And then therefore you kind of know, okay, I'm going to stop buying those or getting a sense of, do you keep an eye on that so that you don't got boxes and boxes of pipes or whatever, because they're losing their popularity.
Yeah. I should check it more often than I do, but I do check it. And part of the reason I don't check it that often is because, again, I, over the course of time, have refined the things that I sell. And in the past 4 years that I've been doing this full time, the things that I'm selling that are in these high rates like pipes have not gone down.
Okay.
Now, talking about before, are there things that you don't sell? What do you do with them? Well, if I have a thing that I notice has been sitting for 6 months, I'll run in real quick and do the calculation. Oh, it's like a 6% sell-through rate.
Got it.
That's why nobody wants this thing. Maybe they wanted it a year ago when I bought it, it seemed like, but they don't now. Or maybe a thing, I looked at it a couple months ago and it didn't seem like it had the demand, so I didn't buy it. But maybe today it's changed. Maybe there's been an uptick in it.
Yeah.
This is a dynamic economic market that we're operating in. It's changing all the time. So I encourage people to do this at least monthly to check on certain categories. But aside from just researching a specific item to see, okay, this specific pipe, has this specific pipe sold in the last 90 days? And if so, what did it sell for? You want to also know the pipes in general. Like, do I even need to be wasting my time pulling out pipes at antique stores and taking a look at them? Or does it not seem like I'm going to be able to sell these? It will save you time to know the types of things to target. You can walk in an area. If it has the things you're looking for, you look at them. If it doesn't, you move on. You're trying to find the stuff. So I did another couple to give you a couple of other examples of things that I sell. Costume jewelry. I sell a lot of fine jewelry, costume jewelry. Costume jewelry lot, meaning a listing that has multiple pieces of costume jewelry in one listing.
Mm-hmm.
You would write costume jewelry lot. There are 20,000, a little over 20,000 of those available for sale on eBay right now. A little over 10,000 of them sold in the last 90 days. So that's a 50% sell-through rate. So I'm looking at costume jewelry. I'm thinking, I'll put this up as a lot. It's a 50-50 whether or not I'm going to sell this in the first 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
the next 90 days might be more like an 80% or maybe a 20%. It could drop, it could rise just like a stock price, right, over time.
Yeah.
Another one would be Pandora. I got a bunch of bracelets yesterday, you know, like a little bag, and they're just little charm bracelets. It's the kind of thing that most people would just say, that looks like really cheap stuff, I'm going to move on. Well, I recognized when I looked at it, it said Pandora on it. Pandora bracelets are charm bracelets. A lot of times they're made out of sterling silver. Some of them are made out of gold. Even the little charm beads, like the tiny little bead, will sometimes sell for $30 or $40.
Wow.
A tiny little glass bead that has a little sliver of sterling silver on it. There are 46,000 listings for Pandora bracelet in eBay. 46,000.
Wow.
15,000 of them have sold in the last 90 days. That's a 41% sell-through rate. So what I'm targeting is stuff that is in the 20 to 30 or more percent range. I've given you two or three categories that are actually pretty high. But if it's in like the 10%, if there's 100,000 of these listed on eBay and it's only a 10% sell-through rate, I'm probably not interested.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's not going to sell, but what it means is the likelihood that it's going to take me 3, 6, or 9 months to sell it is pretty high. It's not a lot of these are selling. One out of every 10 that's listed will sell in a 3-month period. That's not great. Because most of the time, I don't want to float money for 9 months. I want to buy it. I want to put it on an auction cycle for 7 days and then be done with it. Move it, get the money in, move to the next thing.
Right. I suppose that you could, that's the business model you've set up for yourself. I was thinking, if you were somebody who was, one, really interested in this and had that kind of acumen who's like, oh, okay, I want to really keep track of this stuff, because you could see trends of things that are popping up. Like, for instance, I imagine after our last show on the game, what was it, the Magic game?
Magic the Gathering.
Magic
Some people
the Gathering.
Are looking in their closets.
Yeah.
So basically,
you have the explosion of Magic the Gathering cards that are going to be online due to your show. And what you said on this show is,
if somebody comes and sends an email and says, thank you, Matt or Rusty, for telling me to look, I just found my son had all of these Power 9. I'm going to make $100,000. You know, just maybe.
Oh, a little finder's fee?
A little something here. Keep it in mind is all I'm saying. Keep it in mind.
Well, and so anyway, but absolutely give Matt a finder's fee. But more, I guess the idea is, as you build your business, finding your niche, depending on how you want to say it, is pretty important. You found this certain thing that works really well for you, but I'm imagining, I thought a lot about instruments and how you do that. If you really want to focus on that and you could find a way to make it work, I imagine that when you look at something like a high-end item, like an instrument or whatever, the sell-through rates are going to be a little bit different in terms of like, hey man, I don't want to hang on to a million pipes for X amount of time. But I do know that a $50,000 Strat, or however way you want to look at it, might take a little bit longer to find the right buyer, but it's part of the calculation.
And that's an excellent point, because what I'm saying is not like that's not the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bell curve. There on one end, there's stuff that nobody wants. On the other end, there's stuff that everybody wants, and then everything in the middle. So most items, and I'm talking about primarily items that are not super rare or super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I come across, like a 1954 Telecaster, okay, at a great price, or maybe I inherit it or something, I'm like, I don't play, I want to sell it. You're not going to find but a handful of those available. The sell-through rate's going to be like zero. No one's buying them.
Right.
It's not because they're not incredibly rare and incredibly valuable. It's not that there aren't millions of people who would want that instrument. It's that there either aren't enough available, or the group that has the money that can actually afford that instrument is very small. I wouldn't buy a 1954 Telecaster unless I sat down and played on it, because I want to know it has all original parts. I want to know that it plays well. Like, I don't want to pay $20,000 for an instrument, or it would be more than that, and it not sound good. So this is not a tried and true method. Just because you have something that has a 5% or 4% sell-through rate doesn't mean that it isn't valuable. I would know, because I know that vintage Gibson and Martin and Guild, these Fender, these guitars of certain models have high collectability, high demand and high value, but there just aren't a lot of them. So that jacks the price up, and now you've reduced the number of people who have an entry point to purchase those. So this is more true of just the stuff that you would find. Again, a lot of what I'm talking about is geared towards new resellers, people who are interested, or even people who just want to be able to evaluate things that they personally have already or are considering selling. Don't just take that piece of jewelry out to the pawn shop. They're going to take that diamond out. They're going to pitch it. They're going to weigh it and they're going to give you 20 to 25% under scrap weight for the gold. That is not how you want to sell your gold ring or your grandmother's mm-hmm. wedding band. That's right. Not how you want to do it. So this is for people who aren't dealing in high-end instruments like I do part of the time. That's more of just a fun thing, but I know enough about it and I can do repair work on things. So I get entry into things that maybe other people would pass by because maybe I know a way to maximize the monetary value of that someone else wouldn't think of.
Huh. Yeah. Wow. Again, every time we do a show, my brain just like spins. I'm thinking to myself, wow, if you were doing this business, because since we started doing this show, it's amazing to me how many people kind of come out of the woods like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this thing. I heard you were doing this and I listened to the episode and I'm doing this like my buddy that's doing the Etsy channel and artists yeah. that do different things. There are so many different ways to be either a primary market merchant or a secondary market merchant, i.e. you're selling your own stuff or mm-hmm. things you've created, or you're buying things that other people create. We've talked about art on this show, but there's just so much that goes into it. And I think about one of the things that you're trying to help people with is you're sharing a wisdom that can only be gained by time. And in a sense, what we're giving people is a little bit of a, if you play in the video game world,
it's
you
a
know,
game genie.
A cheat. It's a game genie. Exactly. Yeah. We're giving them yeah. a little bit of a cheat. So, yeah. you know, we're giving them the walkthrough on the Nintendo game that allows them not to spend 1 million hours trying to figure this out. So
maybe that's my WWE. I'm the game genie. Yeah, man. Yeah. That's me.
I like to call you the merchant genie.
There you go.
There you go. I think we're on to that. All right. But we digress.
I know. Well, that was essentially it. I wanted to tell people how to calculate that. You go to eBay, you look a thing up, it'll show you the number directly above it. You go to sold, you look at it, you divide it, and you say, hey, this is $2. The average sale price of these is 20. I can do 10 times what I paid in the overall gross sale. And it's got like a 75% sell-through rate. That checks all the boxes for me. I'm walking out the door. I'm buying that thing because
that's awesome.
I'm gonna net $15 and it's probably going to sell in the first month.
So last question, and then we'll get out of here. We talk about eBay a lot because that's the primary place where you sell, but do any of these things exist in like Marketplace or Etsy or, I don't know, any of the other merchant reseller? I know there's some new stuff that's popping up there. Do you have these, or is eBay kind of the only one that really does it this way?
Nope. eBay's the only one that does it that way. Now, if somebody else knows something I don't, please email us or something and let us know. The closest I can tell on, say, Etsy is when you search something, the first items that they pull up, they're kind of more like Google in the sense that there's like, there must be some sort of SEO thing present there, because if I look up funny t-shirt in Etsy mm-hmm. or father's t-shirt for dads or something, it's going to pop up all these things. The first things that pop up are going to be the things that are most popular. So if it's like a print on demand thing, they created some sort of design, they put it on a t-shirt and you can buy it. The reason they're showing you to you first is because that's one of the leaders in selling stuff from that category. More people have bought stuff from that seller. So you can't know exactly how much is sold. You can tell that these are the types of things that are popular. So if you want to do print on demand, for example, do search queries and whatever pops up first, that's what you're trying to emulate, or at least you'll know that's what is the most popular thing selling right now. It doesn't work that way in eBay. If I pop stuff up, I have no idea why they're showing it to me unless I have filters set in, like I want to see the most recent thing that was listed. Usually they're promoting stuff that people have paid them to promote. So you pay them a little extra in eBay and they show you to 45% more people. It's not because I'm going to want that item anymore. They're just showing it to me because they're obligated to, because someone paid them extra to show it to me.
Yeah,
more
right.
often.
So it'll pop right? up. For my grandmother that's out there trying to start a secondary selling business, SEO means search engine optimization. Matt drops a lot of these fancy tech words. Rusty would never do this to you people. Rusty would just get
cousins. That's right. This is true.
He would just say, I just get a feeling. But so we will be, I will try to define these for you. I think we're going to have to do a whole show on how search engines work and how people search for things and how, you know, how things work on eBay and so on and so forth. But we are out of time today. Any last words you have for us, Matt?
No, I'm going to be working on my folding chair work in the wrestling arena. I got the name now, and I just got to get a signature move.
I think the suplex.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everybody have a great week. We'll be back with a new show very soon.